I'm going to speak today about success. I'm not going to speak about the ultimate success because we'll be covering that tomorrow. So what I'm going to do again today is to take a number of passages from the book of Proverbs, and the title to this sermon is Rules and Principles for Success. Now we all want to be successful, but I remember a statement, maybe many of you heard it in times past too, it certainly is true. Success is one-tenth inspiration and nine-tenths perspiration. There's a lot of truth to that. But there are a lot of things that are involved in the area of success. And if we will pay heed to what we find in the book of Proverbs, then I think that we can certainly make improvements. And if we're not as successful as we can certainly be making a step in the right direction. The first principle or rule is to get plenty of counsel. Get plenty of counsel. How many times do people start out on some path and they're ill-informed, they don't know what's involved, they don't know what the problems are, they don't know what exigencies may develop, and as a result they get into some kind of a financial bind and they're not able to continue because they haven't gotten all the facts and they haven't weighed it out carefully to see if they could go ahead with it. You remember what Jesus said when he gave the parable, you know, he said, which one of you intending to build a house sitteth not down first and counteth the cost? Well, anytime we're going to do something, that's what we need to do. We need to sit down, think it through, get counsel, get advice, and don't be afraid to get plenty of advice. Now, I'll say a little bit more about the kind of advice you get, but let's notice some of the Proverbs here, Proverbs 15, verse number 22. There are a number of admonitions here in the Bible about getting counsel. We read here, without counsel, purposes are disappointed. That's right. How many times have you seen little businesses start up? I've observed them. I've actually seen places where I said to myself, if I were a businessman and had the money, this is what I'd set up. So as we read here, without counsel, purposes are disappointed. But in the multitude of counselors, they are established. So that's why it's important to recognize the value of getting plenty of counsel. Proverbs 24, verse number 6. For by wise counsel thou shalt make war. Remember what Jesus said in the parable? Which of you going out, and I'm paraphrasing this, which of you going out to meet an enemy, he comes to you with 20,000 and you have 10,000, he doesn't sit down first and count the cost, then he sends an ambassador to make peace. He finds out what's involved. So, notice, the latter part of this text is the one I want to get to. In multitude of counselors, there's safety. So it is important to realize that, to get counsel. But as we'll see here a little bit later on, to get counsel from people who are in a position to give wise counsel. There are many people, as you well know, they're very ready and willing to give counsel on anything. Doesn't mean they have the slightest knowledge of what's involved, but they'll sure try to help you. Actually, in some cases, they'll do you more harm than good. Proverbs 13, verse number 18. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. Poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction. In other words, he doesn't want to get the facts. He does not want to get the necessary information to go ahead and make a wise decision. Maybe he'll read a book or two and then he'll think on the basis of that book that's the answer. So this is why we have to realize that one who refuses instruction, in other words, he refuses to get counsel and he refuses to get the necessary help, he could be headed for a very serious financial loss or any number of other kind of losses that may be involved. Years ago down in Texas, I visited a lady member, and her husband had a very large ranch there. I forget who he was growing, maize or wheat or something like that. And he'd been a P-38 pilot in World War II. But he was a very, very masculine man, and he was very, very bitter. And I got to talking to him why he was bitter. And what had happened is that the utility company had promised him that they would bring out, I think it was either electricity or it was some very essential utility that was needed for the success of that farm, and they didn't do it. There he was, stuck with a crop that was dying, and he was going under financially, and he was bankrupt because he took somebody's word for something. He trusted them to keep their word, and they didn't keep their word. So had he probably been a little bit more astute and got more advice and found out from other sources how reliable this company was and whether or not they could really deliver the goods or not, it might have saved him that particular problem. I never did know what the outcome of it was because I never saw him again, but I do remember that example very vividly. Proverbs 11, verse number 14. Where no counsel is, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So just remember, as a guideline and a rule, whatever you wish to become involved in or whatever you're doing. Now, there may be a number of minor things that wouldn't require it, and certainly it wouldn't be critical or serious even if you didn't have all the counsel you needed in it. But I'm reminded, I've commented on this before, there are some people right in this room here that know the party I'm referring to very well. But when he was a little boy, his mother was telling me, and this boy, he was rather obstinate. I knew him as a teenager. And she said when he was a little boy, when he was 6 years old, his mother was trying to correct him and tell him how to tie his shoes. He said, Mother, I can tie my own shoes. I've been doing this all my life. Well, isn't that typical of human nature? So we have to be willing to receive counsel and instruction. Now, the second thing. We have to learn by example and observation. But here's what you read in Proverbs 21, verse 11. Here's an example of learning by observation. Learning by what you see in others. It says here, when the scorner is punished, when the scorner is punished, the simple are made wise. They see what happens. They say, uh-oh, I don't want that happening to me. And so they learn by that example. The second part of this I'll save for later. I'll just read the first part here. That's what we're interested in right now. We're learning from observation, and we're learning from example, and we're learning by meditating and thinking. Here in Proverbs 1, verse number 5. A wise man will hear and will increase learning. He listens. He's observant. And as a result, he doesn't have to suffer the consequences of mistakes. It's often like a little child. You might have a hot stove at home, and you'll tell him, don't touch that stove. Don't touch that stove. Some children will listen, and some won't. And the ones that won't, they get burnt very quickly. They may not be seriously burnt, but they'll get their little finger burned, and I tell you, they've learned their lesson. Seems like human beings have to learn by example, or they have to learn by experience. However, we should be able to learn by what we see and by what we observe, and that can save us a lot of suffering and misery. The next thing. Now we're talking about the general rules and principles of success. Learn from our mistakes. Learn from correction. Learn from correction. This one I'm going to read from the Living Bible. And this is Proverbs 15, verse number 32. Listen to this. This is in, now remember, when you're dealing with the Living Bible, you're dealing with a paraphrase. It is not a literal. It's not a transliteration word for word. This Bible is very good in sections of the Bible. When it gets to Paul's epistles, don't bother with it. It's not worth reading. Because they're interpreting everything they interpret because they think Paul is saying one thing or saying another. And in reality, this book of Proverbs is very good. Listen to this text here. If you profit from constructive criticism, you will be elected to the wise man's hall of fame. We're talking about constructive criticism. Now, can criticism be destructive? Certainly can. Now, when you give criticism, what's the motivation behind any criticism you may give, which in all reality you probably shouldn't be giving in the first place? You know, I can tell you a good rule for giving criticism. If somebody asks for it, they don't ask for it, what are you volunteering it for? Anybody appoint you and give you the right to go around being the critic of everyone? You know, we have enough of our own problems, don't we? Constructive criticism is something that you give to build someone up. It reminds me of quite a bit of the Spokesman's Club and originally the Ambassador Club. And the Ambassador Club was built upon the Toastmasters International. And then we modified it for the purposes of college. And then we came up with a Spokesman's Club for church members later on. And the intent of the evaluation of each speaker was constructive criticism. And I used to always tell the men when they're giving an evaluation to someone, when you get done with the evaluation, give that person one solid point of something they can work on to improve. It's not to tear them down. And yet I've seen people come in that club and they have their feelings all right here on their shirt sleeves. And they will get one evaluation from a member. Maybe the club director would add a little bit later in that later on you'd never see them again. They'd be offended and they'd be upset. They couldn't handle the slightest bit of criticism. If you can't handle criticism, I can tell you, your life's going to be a disaster and it'll be a misery. But you have to weigh it. You have to decide who it's coming from, and you got to see whether or not it's of any value. Most of the time, it won't be. And people who go around volunteering it are probably the people that need it the most. If you profit from constructive criticism, you will be elected to the Wise Man's Hall of Fame. But to reject criticism is to harm yourself in your own best interest. So I think it's a very good proverb to go by. But as we'll see a little bit later on here, you have to evaluate everything you hear. Here in Proverbs 10, verse number 17. He is in the way of life that keeps instruction. That is, he pays heed to him, pays attention to it. But he that refuses reproof erreth. If it's legitimate. That's the thing. We have to be willing to evaluate whether or not it's really legitimate or not. If it's legitimate, then we should be aware of the value of it. Proverbs 15, verse number 10. Correction is grievous unto him that forsakes the way. In other words, he's really not interested in God's truth, and when criticism comes, he really is upset about it. He doesn't want to hear it. And he that hateth reproof shall die. What that is saying is that if we're ever going to be a success in God's kingdom, and that's a separate subject from this, but if we're ever going to be a success in God's kingdom, I tell you, we had better be willing to be corrected and receive criticism. That's what the Bible is all about. It's sharper than any two-edged sword. And if your heart and mind is right, it'll go right into the very marrow and the very depth of the soul. And it will correct. That's what it's intended to do. But if you read it over and you don't pay any attention to it, it's always for someone else, you're not going to profit by it. So that's why it says here, he that hateth reproof shall die. And Proverbs 29, verse number 1. Here's a good example of someone who constantly refuses reproof. He will not listen to advice and he will not be corrected. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck. He just becomes stiff-necked and he's not going to take any advice. He's not going to listen to anyone. Shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. You know, the prisons are full of people like that. They have a chip on their shoulder. They're against authority. They hate all authority, whether it's God or man. They resent the law. And so they start just flouting the law and doing whatever they want to do. And, of course, they get caught sooner or later. I can tell you why it's very valuable that you always obey the law. Because here's what happens. If you disobey it once, then you'll think, I can disobey it again. And you'll disobey it again, and you'll disobey it again, and you'll keep that up until you get caught. Sooner or later, you'll get caught. And that's what happens to these people. They get caught in their crimes. And where do they end up? They end up in one or another of the penal institutions. I visited convicts several times in prisons. I visited some in Leavenworth, Kansas. One of them was there for murder, another was there for armed robbery. And the one who was there for murder, he had an affair going with this woman, and she got tired of him, you know, and Apparently he'd never heard the song, "There are 50 ways to lose a lover." So he wouldn't give up on her. And she had her big, powerful son to protect her the next time he came around. And the fellow that went over to see her was armed. And he shot and killed the son. He was in prison. I forget the length of the term. The other fellow had been robbing banks with a pistol. And the guard was sitting there. They came to a table, a long table, and you sat on one side and he sat on the other, and the guard stood there watching it. And when I was waiting for the convicts to come out to talk to me, there were other people lined up down there talking. Some of them were so bitter. Oh, they were just bitter, and they were talking to their wives or someone, and just hatred was all over their faces. It was just pathetic. And the guard said to me, he said, "See these people down here?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'll tell you, we're just like they are, with one difference." He said, "Most of the things that they have done, we've thought of. But," he said, "we know when to stop. We don't go ahead." He said, "These people don't know when to stop. That's why they're in prison. They get in a habit of rebellion against authority, and then the end result, they've ruined their lives. And they get out of prison, and you have a mark against you the rest of your life, because unless you find some understanding employer, every time you go for employment, there's this little box on the employment form that says, 'Have you ever been convicted of a felony?' And if you don't check it, and you get the job, you're going to get fired, because they're going to find out not only are you a felon, but you're a liar. And if you do check it, 9 chances out of 10, you're not going to get the job, because they don't want to hire a felon, a convicted felon. So, I mean, you talk about the strikes being against you. When you get into that kind of a situation, it's very, very serious the rest of your life. So that's why we have to realize the importance here of receiving correction. And a good place really for it to start is in the home with the family. You have a little child and he won't receive any correction. I can tell you where he's headed. I've known people and I could see their children by the time their children were 2 and 3 years of age, what they were going to be when they became adults. It was obvious where they were headed. Some parents just don't seem to grasp these Bible principles of teaching your child to have proper fear and respect and to obey law and authority. Because if they don't, they're going to grow up and they'll have the same kind of an attitude toward their employee. They'll have it toward the law of the land. They'll have it toward God. They'll have it toward the ministry. They'll have it toward anyone that tries to tell them what to do. And they just make life miserable for themselves and whoever they're associated with. All right, the next point. Never be above learning. Never get to the place where you think you can't learn something new. And this is especially true in this age in which we live. And if you're a young person and you don't do one of two things, you either don't get into a profession or you don't learn a trade, then look forward to a life of minimum wage. Because that's what it takes. Now, you may be an entrepreneur of some kind and a businessman of some type, or you may render some service of some type where you have your own thing going and you do better than that, but the average person, they're going to end up at minimum wage. So that's why you have to realize the importance of getting an education. It just amazes me when I see people who are clear up in their 30s and 40s, and they're working in hamburger stands and places of that nature because they never pursued a course in life where they could get ahead. And in this technical age, if you don't, you have really handicapped yourself. Now here's what we read in Proverbs 21, verse number 11. And this is the second part of this verse that I skipped when I read it originally. It says, "When the wise is instructed, he receives or he accepts knowledge." If he's a wise man, he's going to accept it. He'll educate himself. But the problem in today's world is, because of the technical aspects of all facets of society, a self-made man who just learns on his own, and there are some people who can do that, they have a lot more difficulty getting a job, because when you're hired, people in corporations especially, they're looking for people who have the sheepskin. And they want somebody that they think can do the job. It's much like being a college graduate. You can be a college graduate in some field that's even unrelated to your job. Many employers don't care. Why? Because they know if you've got a college degree, if you've applied yourself, you've been through the mill. They can train you. They know you're trainable. But if you don't even have a college degree and you go out and try to get a job, chances are you're going to have a very difficult time getting it if it requires any kind of training. That's why you've got to recognize the value of it. Proverbs 13, verse 18, and I'll read this once again from the Living Bible. See, just think of it in this term, in these terms here, because every time you take a test, unless you're some kind of a brain, you will be making mistakes. And when you make mistakes, it will be pointed out to you just by your score or whatever. Usually it's done in an impersonal manner because you just have the paper to go by and maybe some graduate student corrected it, not the actual professor. But I can remember years ago I was taking an algebra class in school and this old fellow was teaching the class. He wasn't a college professor, but he was a geologist or something like that. And he's very brilliant in math, but he was tongue-tied. And he'd get up there and he started talking one day about quaritic fractions. And I'd never heard of quaritic fractions in my whole life. I couldn't figure out what he was talking about. I got absolutely nothing out of the lesson. And I went up to the blackboard to ask him a question afterwards, and he started talking, and he said, "Don't look at me, look at the board." And two or three times, "Don't look at me, look at the board." And I couldn't understand him. Finally he said, "Don't you understand it? Quaritic fractions." And I looked at the book and said, "Clearing fractions." Clearing fractions. So it was kind of disconcerting to me to have him talk like that, but it was an example of his handicap in speaking and my inability to be sharp enough of a mind to really figure out what he was doing. So in any field you get into that you're going to make mistakes, you will make mistakes, and there will be things that you have to acknowledge that you've done wrong. That just goes with the turf. Listen to this text here. If you refuse criticism, you will end in poverty and disgrace. And if you accept criticism, you are on the road to fame. That's what it requires. Sometimes we get criticized just by circumstances, just by something that happens. We realize the mistake we made. And if we can learn by those things, then that's a tremendous thing to our benefit. And Proverbs 23, verse number 12. And again, let's get this from the Living Bible once again here. Don't refuse to accept criticism. Get all the help you can get. Get all the help you can. Keep in mind, once again, however, we have to evaluate the source of that criticism and we have to ask ourselves whether or not it's valid or not, and we better think it through. If it's not valid, we can see it very quickly. We also have to consider the source of it. Is the source knowledgeable and is the source reading authority, or is the source someone who's self-appointed? That's what we have to realize about it. And then verse number 23, get all the facts at any price and hold on tightly to all the good sense you can get. So that will give you a good idea of being able to continue the learning process. Now next, don't believe everything you hear. Just because somebody says it, does that make it true? The fact is that many people offer advice when they don't really have the knowledge, they don't have the understanding, and they don't have the facts, and they have their own opinions, and they're not in any position to help anybody. Now notice, I'll read this one once again from the Living Bible. This is Proverbs 14, verse number 15. And let me see if I can find it here. I might have to dig through these a bit. Proverbs 14, verse 15. Yes, here it is. This is a Living Bible. Only a simpleton believes what he's told. A prudent man checks to see where he's going. A wise man doesn't necessarily believe everything he hears. So what I would say here, don't believe everything you hear. Weigh it very carefully. And if it's got merit, fine. But just remember what we're told in Ephesians 4, verse number 14. We're not to be blown about by every wind of doctrine. And we should be able to have our feet down solid so that we can recognize error when we spot it. If we're so unstable we can't even tell the truth from the falsehood, then we're in pretty poor shape spiritually. And if you listen to everything that comes along, I can tell you will be in utter chaos. So that's what you need to realize about not believing everything you hear. Now next. Now we're talking about being a successful person. And when you're a successful person, you have to deal with other people, whatever your endeavor or field may be. It's like this ad you've seen on TV where they have these tin soldiers, they're selling these tin soldiers, these molded soldiers, and here's the CEO and he's got all of the top executives in front of him and he's wondering why all of these tin soldiers that they're selling around the country are dressed in women's dresses and clothing. And here's all these executives standing there and they're trying to come up with an answer and they're blaming each other. Isn't that what happens? All right. Don't trust. Here's a principle to keep in mind. Don't trust in someone who's unreliable. If you're going to get involved with someone where it involves anything serious, you better find out, first of all, before you become involved with him, whether or not he's a reliable person. You trust in somebody who's unreliable, and whatever you're doing can end up as a disaster. Notice here, Proverbs 10, verse number 26. As vinegar to the teeth, and as smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to them that send him. He's not going to get anything done. He'll just delay. And a lot of times when things have to be done, they have to be done within a time frame. And if they're not done within the time frame, then what problem has been created? It impacts everybody else. It generates stress. And it's all uncalled for. That's why it's important to realize that you should be a trustworthy person yourself, and if someone gives you something to do, be sure you do it on time. And don't make it difficult for the next person. Proverbs 25, verse 19. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. That pretty well describes what we sometimes go through when we're trusting in someone who cannot deliver the goods. So if we want to be successful, there are two principles here we need to apply. We need to be sure we're reliable ourselves, and if you have to deal with someone, be sure you have someone reliable, someone you can depend on. Someone whose word is good. Next. Don't associate with fools. Don't become involved with and make your bosom buddies or a bosom buddy a fool. Because if you do, he's only going to embarrass you and get you into trouble. And I might also add, even in the matter of business enterprises, if you get mixed up with someone who's a fool, it's only going to be more difficult for you. One of the reasons that we always advise church members in the past not to get into businesses with each other. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because you expect from a church member something you'd never expect from somebody in the world. And when, lo and behold, when you find out that church member's got faults and he can't live up to what he's supposed to live up to properly, and he lets you down, and he's got weaknesses and flaws and faults, then the resentment is far greater than it ever would be for somebody in the world. Because if you're dealing with somebody in the world, you don't expect that much from them. You hope that they will, and many of them do, but a lot of them don't. Now, as I said here, don't associate with fools. Proverbs 14, verse number 7. Go from the presence of a foolish man, when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. When you're associating with someone and it doesn't take you very long to see that he is not very wise and he's liable to get you in trouble, then you'd better just get away from him. Proverbs 29, verse number 9. Success often involves this. If a wise man contends with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. That's why I said, don't ever argue with a fool. People might not be able to know the difference. So you get into somebody like that and you start advising them, and no matter what you do, no matter which direction you go, you're not going to get any peace. So you have to recognize that. Proverbs 23, verse number 9. Speak not in the ears of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. He won't appreciate them. If you have gems and wisdom and sound words you can give someone, you don't need to volunteer it. They're not going to listen to it. They're not interested in it. You've all experienced this, haven't you? You've had a certain thing happen to you, and then a certain incident arises. Somebody says something to you, and boy, it gels. It makes sense. It really gels. You get it. You really got it. You've internalized it. All the other things he says, never meant a thing. They went in one ear and out the other. So unless it's something that someone really is interested in and really wants to know about, why waste your time? Next, we're talking about success. Don't be lazy. It leads to poverty. Notice Proverbs 10, verse number 4. I like some of these other versions. I don't have the particular one. I think it's a Living Bible back there in one of the earlier books, Genesis or wherever it is. And it talks about man's lot in life. And it says here, he has to scratch out an existence on this earth. That's absolutely true. The only way you get ahead and are successful in this life is you have to scratch out an existence. Whatever you do. Because you're going to find out that any other course of life is going to lead to disaster. And it will not get you anywhere. One of the most important things you can teach a child is a work ethic. That's why it tells us in the book of Lamentations, it's good to bear the yoke in your youth. If you don't learn it as a youth, then it'll be that much more difficult, if not impossible, to learn it as an adult. So, Proverbs 10, verse number 4. He becometh poor that deals with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent maketh rich. In Proverbs 6, verse number 6. Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provides her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. She thinks in advance and she plans. So it's another good example of success. If we want to be successful, we have to be hard workers. And almost always, if you find someone who is in his own business, he will probably work harder by far than the people who are working for him. They used to say about Lyndon Johnson, they said there's only one man that drives himself to excess harder and farther than he does any employee that ever worked for him, and that's Lyndon Baines Johnson. So laziness does not pay off. And here's another one now. You've heard of people being greedy, haven't you? That's why you read here in Proverbs 15. Verse number 27. He that is greedy of gain troubles his own house. That's exactly what happened to a lot of these men. They troubled their own homes. They brought sorrow and a lot of pain upon their families. And to this very day, whenever they try to get a job, unless they go into some legitimate business of their own, there will be that little check mark. Have you been convicted of a felony? It's not worth it. That's why we need to realize the importance of playing the game right and not getting greedy. Next, avoid debt if possible. Now, some things we can't avoid debt on, because every time you buy a car, unless you're well-heeled in cash and can go down and buy it for cash, then there's going to be a lien holder. And you just default on a payment or two, and then you've lost all the investment you put in it. So you have to be careful. Some things we do have to get on credit, and we have to go in debt for. A home is another good example. We usually buy homes on a 30-year note. And what happens if we default? We lose everything. So we do need to be cautious, and we have to live within our means. But one of the biggest problems with people today is what I call the credit card curse.
They're so willing to get you in debt so fast. And some people are so gullible, the very moment they get their hands on a credit card and they can go out and have something, they never stop to think, well, what's going to happen when the day of reality comes and I haven't got to pay it? Some people get so tied down in credit cards, they're ending up paying interest, years and years. It's a lack of discipline. And I'll tell you what it is. The inability to handle money is a character problem. It's a character defect. Well, that's why we need to realize the danger of getting involved in owing money. I'll just read this one text to you here, Proverbs 22, verse number 7. The rich rules over the poor. And then here's the one that I want to get to. The borrower is servant to the lender. You're serving him. You've heard the phrase, it certainly is true. Money is a good servant, but a poor master. It certainly is a poor master. Next. I'm talking about money once again. Here's another thing. Don't co-sign for anyone. I know a man, and his son got involved in some kind of a business scheme, and so he came to his father, and he asked his father to co-sign for him, and his father had to co-sign and put his whole house down as a chattel. And what happened? The son defaulted. And the father, I don't know whether he lost it or not, he had to come to the church to get help to keep from losing his own home. I wouldn't even co-sign for one of my own children. And I'll tell you why. Unless I had the absolute money set aside and I knew I could pay it, and I would insist that they make regular payments. The Bible says don't co-sign for anyone. Notice what you read here in Proverbs 6, verses 1 and 2. My son, if you be surety for a friend. I can tell you how friends depart very rapidly in the church and in the world, and that is when they end up borrowing money from one another and they owe someone money. I tell church members, you know, if they're going around lending money to other people in church, I tell them, look, you might as well be really realistic. Regard it as a gift. Regard it as a gift. If you be surety for a friend, if you have stricken your hand with a stranger, you entered into agreement with him. You are snared with the words of your mouth. You are taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver yourself when you are come into the hand of your friend. Go humble yourself and make sure of your friend. In other words, you'd better humble yourself and get out of that thing. Okay, now, let's go to the next one here. Don't associate with hotheads or unstable people. Proverbs 29, verse number 22. Here's the reason why. You get mixed up with someone like that, and you'll soon get a reputation. And they'll get you in trouble. Proverbs 29, verse number 22. An angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. Constantly stirs up strife. Proverbs 22, verse number 24. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. Don't associate with hotheads and people like that. Proverbs 24, verse number 21. My son, fear thou the Lord and the king. And then here's, I'm talking about unstable people. Meddle not with them that are given to change. One day they're like this, the next day they're like that. Their emotions run hot and cold. They get upset at this, or they get upset at that. And then you're associating with them. What's it going to do to you? Also, I like the way the Living Bible translates this. Although this may not be the actual sense, it certainly is applicable. It says here, don't associate with radicals. Don't associate with radicals. People who are extreme. Next. If you're going to be successful, control your drinking. God gives us all of these things on this earth to use and enjoy in the proper manner. But I can tell you, they can be turned around and misused. We can misuse eating. We can misuse drinking. What can you think of that we can't misuse? So the use of anything God has given us is a character issue. I knew a man years ago who was a very successful, ran a successful trunking company. He had a series of dump trucks, and he was very successful. And he started hitting the bottle. He lost everything he had. I remember I used to see him sitting on the curb. I delivered papers early in the morning. He'd be sitting at the curb at 6 o'clock in the morning waiting for the bar to open at 8 so he could go in and start his drinking. I don't know where he got the money, but he was drinking and he was an alcoholic. We talk about people who, quote, can hold their liquor. You know what that's really saying? They have developed an alcohol tolerance. It tells you they're an alcoholic. Notice what you read here in Proverbs 20, verse number 1. Proverbs 20, verse number 1. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived, and the actual Hebrew here means whoever staggers or reels by it, is not wise. He's had too much. And Proverbs 23, verse number 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has babbling? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Here's the answer. They that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not upon the wine when it is red, that is, when it's fermenting or still working, and when it gives its color in the cup, when it moves itself upright. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes shall behold strange women, and your heart shall utter perverse things. Yeah, that's right. You've heard the saying. The girls all get prettier at closing time. That's because of too much booze. And your heart shall utter perverse things. In other words, you'll say things that you normally wouldn't say at all, because it lets your inhibitions down. Yea, you shall be as he that lies down in the middle of a sea, or he that lies upon the top of a mast. You know, if you're on a ship and the ship's rocking back and forth and you're up on the top of a mast, you're getting quite a ride, aren't you? They have stricken me, they shall say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Well, that's why we need to realize. You want to be successful? Control of alcoholic beverages must be one of your priorities. It certainly is a mark of what a proper Christian should be doing. Proverbs 3, verse number 10. Here's the last thing I want to emphasize in bringing this to a close, and that is, we want to be successful. Give God his due. God gives us everything, doesn't he? Where do we get everything? It comes from this earth that God created, and it comes from that sun that provides the energy for it. Everything is a gift of God. That's what it says here. Honor the Lord. Proverbs 3, verse 9. Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all your increase. So shall your barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Those are just some of the rules and principles of success. But remember, as I stated, we're not talking about the ultimate success, although every single one of these would be important principles to incorporate in the attainment of that ultimate success. And that ultimate success we'll be speaking of in future sermons.